to be really successful in a remote or hybrid environment, you stop being autopilot selfish and you start being more intentional about finding out more about every person you are interacting with and what are their circumstances today. One of my favorite questions is, how are you really? And, you know, what's happening with you lately, to really get a download and then to talk about preferences.
Well, hey, gang, great to be back. Welcome to episode number 157 of Future Proof. I am, as always, your host, Bill Sheridan. Glad to be here, folks. Glad that you're here, too. And here, for me, is St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, that's home. That's work. That's where it all happens, folks. Yeah, I work for the Maryland Association of CPAs, but I've been full-time remote from my home in St. Louis now for, God, the past 16 years. We call it the Midwest branch of the MACPA. I was remote before remote was cool, folks, I guess you'd say, and I'm still trying to figure it out. And that's why I'm really, really excited about this week's show. I'll tell you a little bit more about it here in just a minute. First, let's start the week off with this, shall we? This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, remote work. Let's talk about it, shall we? Because, I mean, like it or not, we are remote now to some extent or another, all of us, which means for all you leaders and managers out there, we've got to figure out how to best manage remote workers. It's a new ballgame. It really is. I mean, let's count the ways, right? There's technology, there's engagement, wellness, culture, trust. There's a big one for you, trust. That is a big one when it comes to managing our remote teams. We've got to trust that they're going to get their work done. We can't, or really we shouldn't want to be watching over them 24 hours a day, much as many of us would like to. At some point, seems like we got to give them some autonomy. And too many of us just don't want to do that, right? Refuse to give up that control. We've got to know what our people are doing and when and where and how. And folks, that, in my mind anyway, that's just not how good work gets done today, right? I've got to share an article with you that I found recently. It's entitled "Employers Turn to Tracking Software to Monitor Remote Workers, Raising Ethical Questions." It's on the digiday.com website. And here's a bit of what it says. It was written by reporter Tony Case, and he writes, quote, "Even as employees, feeling supported by their bosses has become a touch point during the pandemic. And as the issue of individual privacy remains on the front burner, companies using assorted monitoring techniques, including tracking software, to keep track of what their employees are up to has caught on as more of us are working remotely. A recent survey of 1,200 employers in the United States by digital.com found that 6 in 10 companies use monitoring software to track employee activity and productivity. The survey also revealed that among employees who were being monitored, 53% were spending as many as 3 hours per day on non-work activities, and 88% of companies had terminated workers after employing tracking techniques. Companies following their employees' activity argue that it's essential to understand how their people are spending their work days and to ensure that hours are being properly accounted for," end quote. And just from a personal perspective, okay, my question would be, at what cost? Okay, especially in this environment where it's getting harder to find and keep talented employees, right? And you're going to run the risk of running them out the door by micromanaging them and tracking them. Your employees don't want that. They want that autonomy we were talking about earlier, and your trust, right, to do their jobs in the way that they think those jobs should be done. In fact, that's one of the three things that all employees want. According to research that was compiled by bestselling author Dan Pink, those three things: number one, autonomy, right? Give people real control over various aspects of their work. Self-direction is a key to meaningful engagement, right? Number two is mastery. Give your folks room to grow, right? Give them stretch assignments that will push them a bit out of their comfort zone and let them master those things and then push them some more. The idea is to foster an environment of continuous improvement and continual mastery and growth. And that third thing is purpose, okay? Connecting your work to a cause that's larger than yourself drives the deepest motivation and engagement among your people. Does your organization's purpose motivate people in that way? So I think that managing your remote teams comes down to, in large part, those three things, right? Are you giving them autonomy over their jobs? Are you letting them learn new future-ready skills? And are you giving them a sense of purpose in their work? And I might even throw a fourth one in there, right? Are you giving your people work that allows them to use their strengths, the things they're just naturally good at, right? That kind of strength-based work, it feels better. It's of better quality. People are more productive. So, I mean, there's a million different avenues that we could explore when it comes to remote work and managing remote teams. And that's why I'm so excited to have as my guest this week, Jennifer Wilson. Jennifer is co-founder and partner of Convergence Coaching. That's a national consulting firm that's dedicated to developing leaders and transforming teams. She's also one of Accounting Today's 100 Most Influential People in Accounting, one of Inside Public Accounting's top 10 most recommended consultants, and one of CPA Practice Advisor's top 25 thought leaders and most powerful women in accounting. She gave a talk at the 2021 AICPA Engage Conference about this very topic. So I wanted to get some insights from her. And we touched on a lot of stuff here, right? What the future of work looks like, potential landmines that employers have to watch out for with remote work, the opportunities that this type of environment offers us, and actually what employees themselves can do to make the transition easier, all of that. So just a really great talk this week about a topic that's top of mind for a lot of folks in our profession and everywhere else, really, these days. Here is my conversation with Jennifer Wilson. Jennifer, thanks for being here. So I guess my first question is, how big of a shift does this move to remote working represent for our profession?
Well, I think it's been a slow shift. I think a lot of people feel like the pandemic certainly accelerated it, but I think somehow some people think we weren't already doing it. And we were already doing it in many firms. There are a lot of wonderful progressive firms who already were way down the path on remote and blended work. The pandemic, of course, with us all wanting to get away from each other and not get sick, accelerated it and caused firms that didn't want to support remote work to suddenly have to. And that's helped, you know, but how big a shift is it? It's a mammoth shift. So the firms that were already there, they made a mammoth shift a while ago. And yet it's more of a mammoth shift in my mindset and in the way I think and maybe my belief system than it is a mammoth shift in operating procedure.
Right, right. So explain what you mean by that. What's the difference between those two things, the operating procedure versus that mind shift?
Well, the mind shift or the mindset piece is sort of our individual and collective thinking, our cultural approach. And so I'll give one huge example, and that's trust. So I have to make a shift in trust. In the past, our traditional way of thinking was, I believe you are working if I can see you working. If you are in the office, if your car is the first one here and the last to leave, you must be the most productive, incredible worker ever. Right. So I trusted physical presence more than other things. Mm-hmm. And so the shift to remote and blended work requires that we sort of lose our attachment to physical visibility and that I can see you working minute by minute and you come into a physical place and I witness you there and that means you're productive. And I start to trust that if you have assignments and you have goals, that you will accomplish those regardless of where you physically are. and that I can trust you to do that, and that I don't need to see you. And so that's a mind shift. And you could say, Jen, you know, that's ridiculous. That's so old school. But that is one of the most significant inhibitors right now to people being able to make this shift permanently. And by the way, I'm going to just clarify something, Bill. When I talk about remote and blended work, some people hear me like I'm trying to make every firm in the country be 100% remote. Mm-hmm. Never be in person again. Never a three-dimensional interaction. That's not it at all. That's not what we're trying to help happen. We're trying to have people be confident having people work anytime, anywhere, as makes sense for that particular circumstance, whatever that is, and to give up our attachment that in the office is the only productive place.
Yeah. So to that point, I mean, there are some people, my wife is one of them. She and I have been kind of holed up in our house since the lockdown came up, but she's one of those people who cannot wait to get back to the office, right? That's her happy place. She's much more comfortable being around people, being in that kind of environment. I'm much more productive and happy here in my home office where I can just kind of do my own thing. So I guess my question is that hybrid model, some in the office, some not, is that the reality for employers going forward?
Absolutely. And, you know, what she's getting from that office, whatever it's feeding her, if as firms and organizations start to think about how much office space do we need, you know, are we really going to spend money just so people like to go there for their happy place? We'll start redefining what we do in the office versus what we do at home. For a lot of people, the lockdown represented work from home in its ugliest fashion. I've run a completely remote, completely flexible business for 21 years. We did not stay home 24/7. We were able to go outside. We were able to go in the evenings to the gym or to restaurants and to commune with others in person. We were able to have our kids leave and go to school or have childcare come in or go to daycare. And so we weren't homeschooling. I mean, what we just did in the last 18 months is not real blended hybrid remote work. It's a bad version of it.
Right.
And you know, I mean, most of us were afraid to go to the grocery store. That's not what remote work is.
Right. Yeah. And I think we're all kind of learning our way through that, right? I mean, initially when that switch was flipped and we all had to immediately transition to remote work, there was a period of time where I think we all kind of thought, hey, this is great. This works. We're all productive. We're all doing the stuff that we ought to be doing. And then as time went on, there were some things that started to creep in, some burnout issues, some wellness issues that we didn't initially take into consideration. So it seems to me like, I mean, we're building that bridge across it and we're not anywhere close to being done with it.
For sure. So cabin fever set in, that's the first thing, you know, no, for real. I mean, it's like a snow day that never ends or something, right? We're all super excited about it at first, and then it's really relentless. And so I think that this lockdown was not remote in its best light, but also, you know, many of us weren't trained on what I'll call the procedural pieces. Mm-hmm. So we talked about mindset, and I said trust is one of them. There's a bunch. There's like probably 10 different mindset elements, and we can come back to those if you want. But as an example, the procedural or process things that need to be taught are things like, you know, having boundaries right. on your work, where we have clear delineation between work and not work.
Which to me is huge. I mean, I've been remote work, I've been full-time remote for 15 years. And, mm-hmm. you know, in this environment, your office is your home and mm-hmm. You have to have those boundaries. Otherwise, you find it really, really easy just to be working all the time. And it's that nobody wants to go there, right?
So right. And yeah, and I mean, I'm a decent hard worker, so I work probably more hours than people want to work, but I have clear stop times, you know, and during those stop times, my laptop is not out. I am not on my phone answering emails or responding to chats on Teams or I'm not working. You know, this is a stop time. And my family knows about stop time, you know, because they'll say, what are you doing on your phone? You know, like trying to check to see if I'm scrolling Facebook or responding to my running group posts, or if I'm actually sneakily working during stop time, you know. So you do have to have those borders. The other thing is, it's kind of interesting, another thing that we really lost when we all went remote and didn't have any process for is many who traveled to their office by car or train or whatever, they had that commute, they had this ramp up time in the morning to like shift from home mindset to work mindset. And then they had a decompression in the evening where I could sort of think about work while I was traveling home and maybe leave it. And when you and I've worked remotely, my office is right next, you know, right down the hall from my bedroom and right near our great room. You know, it's easy for me to stay in work mindset, you know, like never shift. So I try to do things like I'm going to quit work and, you know, now it's the stop period. And maybe the first thing I'm going to do is walk outside and get the mail and maybe, you know, turn on some sprinklers or do a little bit of like outside work if it's nice enough to be outside. Not, you know, not hours of yard work or something, but just literally a 15, 20 minute wandering period where I'm not working and I'm not really engaged at cooking or the kitchen or whatever. I'm just in that transition period. Really, and I've learned,
Yeah, that's a really great point. I mean, and I mean that transition really is, if you don't have it, it's really so important, right? To get into that, to shift that mindset from work to home. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise I can come off a call like this. Let's say we were doing this and ending. I usually try to end my stop period starts after 6 p.m. You know, my family will be like, what are you doing in there? It's, you know, 7, you know, or whatever. But I try to get out by 6, but I can go right sometimes from 6 o'clock. And if one of my kids or you know, someone else is making dinner, I could go sit at the table and start eating with them. They're all talking and I'm still like, don't forget to send that email to that guy. Yeah. You know, I'm still in that weird work process mind.
Yeah.
So anyway, that paying attention to transitions is important, and you don't need a big transition, but you need some kind of transition if you can.
Exactly. What are some other landmines that employers might need to watch out for, just keep in mind as they're managing these remote workers or these blended workforces? What are some things that they need to kind of keep top of mind?
Okay. I have at least two that we have to talk about. One is another mindset thing, and then one's a process procedure thing. So sludge. In the book, Work Sucks and How to Fix It, there's a whole discussion of this concept of sludge, which is a little bit like mudslinging. If you think of sludge as like some dirty glob of something that you toss around at each other at work. And sludge, as it turns out, as I've been talking about it, teaching about it, it's not just about remote and blended work. We sludge each other on all kinds of stuff, but it's sort of sarcastic, smart aleck, passive aggressive sentences or statements that I make that make you feel bad about your approach. So you may be somebody who works remotely most of the time, and you come for the holiday party, or you come in for a learning event, and I see you and I say, "Hey, Bill, I forgot you worked here." And you think, "Oh, that's kind of rough. You know, that's a little painful. Maybe my remote work isn't that supported by that leader that said that to me." Or, you know, "I don't know if we need to include her. She's just part-time."
Oh, right.
The word "just" and the lack of inclusion. So do you really need to be at home today? Is there a real reason for working from home this week? And things like that, that it's tiny little language things that sort of make our team members wonder, does our senior leadership really support anytime, anywhere work or remote and hybrid? Or are they sort of putting up with me? And is what I'm doing not really accepted?
Or even, I mean, there's that whole like out of sight, out of mind thing too. Am I even there? Right? I mean, I'm not in the office.
Am I even, are people even thinking of me or what I'm contributing, right? And I think that's a huge thing for a lot of remote workers as well.
Well, and so, and Bill, one of the things is you and I are kind of flipping back and forth. We try to distinguish between the things that the organization and the leaders need to do mm-hmm. and the things that we as individuals are 100% responsible for. And so what you were just pointing to is visibility, mm-hmm. right? And it's both. Our leaders need to work on making sure that they have visibility to all people, regardless of when and where they work. Yeah. And then the people need to feel like they are making themselves visible. And by visible, I don't mean three-dimensionally present in front of you or outside right. of your office in a cube. I mean, like, I'm accessible, I'm responsive, my camera's on if everybody's supposed to have cameras on, mm-hmm. You know, those sorts of things. And so that leads me, so we have to start creating a no sludge environment and, yeah. And like sludge unaccepted, but sludge, I'm not going to sludge you for sludging, but I'm going to say, hey, time out. I think that might've been sludge. Let's look right. at that together. And we're going to start working on not doing that related yeah. to hybrid and remote. And then we'll find all the other creepy places we do it.
Right.
Then the other piece of it is accessibility and response time. And that's a procedural or a business process or workflow pitfall. And that is, I can't really tell how or when to reach you. And so I wonder, where are you? And maybe I don't reach to you because I'm not sure if it's okay. And so one of the things we tell remote or hybrid workers is you have to be super clear and in writing with when can I be accessed? When am I accessible?
Yep.
And that means keeping calendars current. And that means really paying attention to team status, if you're using Teams or whatever, Yam or whatever your chat function is internally, that we're going to really work on accessibility. We're going to work on response time. And that is when I am accessible, what is my committed response time?
Right.
So, you know, I'm on a call with you right now. I'm not answering Teams. It's on Do Not Disturb, right? But they can see that I'm working. So I'm not giving, 2-minute response time. And I don't want my team to think that I am. So maybe 1-hour response time is a reasonable when I'm accessible. But then there's times when I'm not accessible, like those borders for work where I say after 6, that's not inside my accessibility period, which means if you sent me a Teams message at 6:20 and my calendar shows me done at 6, mm-hmm. then don't expect an hour response time. I'm not giving them
right.
that. And so, so being super clear about that between me and my team, both upstream and downstream, super critical to be clear about accessibility and response time with clients mm-hmm. is important so that clients... You know, some people will, take the school of thought, like whatever my clients demand, I do. Mm-hmm. And some services like transaction advisory service, M&A, you know, okay, maybe we do need 24/7 and mm-hmm. half an hour response time or something, but mostly we can manage our clients' expectations about accessibility and response times.
And I think we all kind of have a good feel of like this client needs this type of response time versus this client who is okay with me not responding for 10 or 12 hours or whatever the case may be. So, and it's kind of on a case by case basis, I would think in a lot of cases, but.
Yeah. I mean, and for certain services, we could say this is our typical accessibility yeah. and response time policy. How does that work for you, client? Yeah. I do think that like you, let's pretend you're the partner on the client job and you're the one that sold them and you're the relationship manager. Mm-hmm. You may have a clear picture of that, but I, if I'm on your job, might not. Mm-hmm. So you have to explain it to me if it is something other than our norm. And so having like a service norm is probably a best practice that we would recommend. And then talking about clients or projects where the norm is not going to happen or people on our team that we can't demand the norm of because of their personal circumstances, whatever those are. So there's a lot of places to, you know, to make that clear, your calendar, your status, you can put it in the schedule, you know, so that if we're doing scheduling, that's all super clear.
Sure.
But without that, we end up with this weird thing called, you know, I don't know when you're available. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when I can schedule you. I don't know when to ping you. So sometimes we hear staff in the office and the manager's out either at home working or at a client's working So the staff go to another manager who's in the office and ask their questions because they don't know when to access their manager on that job. Right. And that's all education, because we don't have to have the manager who's in the office handle all these questions on jobs that aren't theirs. We have to train people and teach them, hey, here's how we do it. The other thing, Bill, is that being really clear about communication vehicles. So, talking about communication preferences with the team and with clients, and understanding what we would call normal transactional communication and then breakthrough communication. So on our team, emails have a certain amount of response time. Teams chat different. It's a more elevated, faster response time if you are in your accessibility period and you're not on Do Not Disturb because you're doing a webinar or something. So that's a faster response time than an email. And then the breakthrough communication for us is texting. If there's an emergency happening in our organization and somebody needs help right now, they're texting the person they need it from. And so we carry our phones around during our work hours, and we pay attention to them and look down at the text every once in a while to see if there's anything happening.
Yep.
And it doesn't happen hardly ever,
right,
because we don't use it for any other communication but breakthrough. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And so being clear about those things, most of us back in the traditional, everybody's in the office, we it was sort of a no holds bar, no rules, use any communication, expect anything kind of a circumstance, which led to disappointment also. Mm-hmm. And I come to your office and I just start standing there and talking to you. You're thinking, hey, you know, I don't have time for this right now. So whole remote blended creates more intentionality around all of that. More clarity of expectation, which creates less disappointment and less frustration if we are really good about managing those expectations.
There's a whole lot of just being open and honest and clear about expectations and communication involved in all this. And my next question was going to be, are there, you know, new leadership skills or management skills that we all have to master like in these times? It almost sounds like the answer might be, empathy almost to a certain extent. Put yourself in the other person's shoes and think about, I don't know, what do you think about that? That just kind of strikes me, is that there's a whole lot of like, there's more thinking about other people than there used to be almost, because things are so different.
So 100% agreement. I would say, like, when people say, are there different skills? I say, no, they're actually the skills we were supposed to be doing in the office. Mm-hmm. We just weren't doing it. Okay. So, that's how it feels to us that, and when we really get a firm doing the right things, they're like, wow, this isn't that different than what we should have been doing in person. Right. So, but you know, one of the mistakes we make as human beings is we lead from selfish interest. So my communication preferences must be yours.
Right.
My accessibility periods must be yours. My motivators are your motivators. My rules and kind of cultural mindset, the way I think, well, you should think that way. And we do that with not just talent, like I try to make my talent mirror me in some way, but also with clients. You know, we don't often say to clients, what is your communication preference? How does email work for you? Would you rather I pick up the phone and call? Instead, we make assumptions based upon our preference. Mm-hmm. And that's not, it's a selfish, but it's also not very empathetic. It doesn't open dialogue for compassion. You know, here's my circumstances and this doesn't work for me. And I hope you understand. We're just sort of selfishly one way, my way or the highway. And none of us is really thinking that, it's just the way we operate. Right. So to be really successful in a remote or hybrid environment, you stop being autopilot selfish and you start being more intentional about finding out more about every person you are interacting with and what are their circumstances today. One of my favorite questions is, how are you really? And you know, what's happening with you lately, to really get a download, and then to talk about preferences and negotiate preferences. I'm not just doing everything your preference way necessarily, but I am finding out your preferences, sharing my own, and then we agree on it, what we would call a workable system between us. And workability is what matters. But you don't know what workability is unless you talk to the people involved. If it's just your workability, that's not going to be successful. It won't work.
What kind of opportunities do you think this situation that we're in and this new model that we're kind of feeling out, what kind of opportunities does all that present to us?
A huge number of opportunities. So one is, you know, the most obvious opportunities are that if I really get good, our organization gets good, and we as individuals get really strong at managing remote and hybrid teams and clients, we can no longer be constrained by our geographic borders for recruiting, mm-hmm. For retention of people, and for building niche practices and building client practices outside of our geographies. So in this talent short environment, I no longer have to just only recruit where people could commute to the place we have a physical location. I can recruit beyond those borders. And if people leave our firm for a relocation, they can stay with us as employees working remotely, which is mammoth and very important that we have that available. And the same with client service. Remote client service opens up all sorts of opportunities. And not just like I can have clients outside of my geography, but the minute we really embrace remote client service, and we already were forced there with COVID. So, you know, we should not go backwards on remote client service unless the client insists. For the most part, firms are finding their clients are like, hey, that worked last year and we're good with it again if you want to. Mm-hmm. And so we're telling firms, don't reverse that. Do not go backward. To go ahead for the clients and ask clients, of course, again, managing from their preferences, but encourage them to stay more remote. But the more that we do, the more efficient we are, the less commute time our people have, the more wear and tear on their mental and physical health, or the less wear and tear and the more, freedom that they feel versus those kind of tied down physical commutes, especially for the audit teams and big consulting project teams that would just go sort of live someplace for a week or two. We don't have to do that anymore. And that opens up a quality of life, that remote client service. Now, when I start talking about that, a lot of times the red flag goes, you know, flies up and an objection is like, what? No, FaceTime with my clients, you know, and we say, well, sending your people out to an audit job, you know, in a conference room and saying to them, you know, hey, don't go talk to the client. Tell me what issues we have. That's not FaceTime. The client doesn't, you know, value that as relational. Right. So we still could do three-dimensional relational visits. We could go spend whole days at our clients. I'd love you to do it outside the service cycle because clients will feel like we care about them more year round. So it's not all or nothing, but man, so big benefits in borderless service, borderless reach, borderless recruiting. Those are some of the biggies, but I also think it allows us to embrace all work styles and it allows us to embrace all work stages, life stages, people that are taking care of elderly parents, people with young children, you know, people who have, commute issues. Like I was with a firm in Georgia several years ago when they started to implement their way more remote policy. And one of the reasons was, Atlanta went through this mammoth rebuild on highways, and highways near their office were being reconstructed and making the commute into the office double. And so they just thought, wow, this is such a terrible quality of life and so inefficient for our poor people. Let's get more remote. So we can handle stuff like that so much easier when we let go of this, I need you in the office thing.
Yeah. Oh man. Great points. And I know the list is long, but if you could boil it down to like one thing that employers can do today to kind of make this transition easier, what do you think would get them the most, you know, the biggest bang for their buck, so to speak?
Well, I think that they have to create a cultural commitment statement about this. They have to, a guerrilla leadership team needs to be formed to write down the cultural commitments they have related to remote or hybrid work or the new way of working. We like to say that this is opening up new work options as opposed to saying we're, you know, going back to the office or we're going to allow remote work. We're just opening up new work options. And so what are the cultural commitments around that? And that's where you would make some of these sort of manifesto mindset statements about we trust our employees, and, you know, and what does that trust look like, and no sludge, and, you know, clarify expectations, keep your calendars current, you know, just goofy things like that. Now, you might call that a policy. We would say, no, we don't really want much policy here. We want statements, value statements that also say those are, you know, illustrated by these actions or something like that. Some firms will put that out as sort of a do's and don'ts, and we're fine with that. You know, I'm fine with that. I prefer everything in the affirmative, do these things. And presumably if it's not on there, it's a don't. But I think that's the number one thing. If you don't have that, we could do all sorts of training. You know, we could, you know, we could put everybody through a boot camp about how to be a good leader and manager inside this. But if we don't have some sort of written commitment statement, if we don't integrate this into our core fabric of what we say we are culturally, then it's unclear about whether there's accountability for the best practices in remote, hybrid, or blended work. It's almost like, you know, those are good ideas, but I don't have to adhere to that. I heard that in a training once, but that's not what I believe, so I'm not going to do it. And when we leave that looseness up at the leadership level, we end up with a lack of consistency and parity. And so we'll have like the tax department being forced to come into the office, and the audit folks have all this trust that they already had anyway, you know, because they were working in client offices, and the client accounting department's 100% remote, and admin gets a mixed bag, and all of a sudden we have disgruntlement with the lack of parity and consistency. So that would be the number one thing. It'll handle the mindset issues for sure. And I think that's the most important, is to shift the way we think and what we're committed to together.
Yep. Well, Jennifer, great insights, great talk. Thank you for being here. This has been a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Bill.
Really, really good stuff there from Jennifer Wilson. Jennifer is co-founder and partner of Convergence Coaching. That's a national consulting firm dedicated to developing leaders and transforming teams. She's also one of Accounting Today's 100 most influential people in accounting, one of Inside Public Accounting's top 10 most recommended consultants, also one of CPA Practice Advisor's top 25 thought leaders, and most powerful women in accounting. To learn more, visit convergencecoaching.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. Here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is a wrap on this week's show, folks. Thanks for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.